Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
As always, thank you very much for joining Industrial Talk, and thank you very much for your continued support of a platform that celebrates industry professionals all around the world. You are bold, brave, you dare greatly, you innovate, you collaborate, you solve problems all the time. That's why we celebrate you on Industrial Talk. We have a great conversation. We're going to be, it's a bit of a lengthy conversation, so I'm going to make the intro relatively short. However, we're going to be talking about the human condition, the evolving human condition in the workplace. I know, as I point to you, you are always challenged with how do we find the right workforce? How do we retain our skilled individuals? That's what we're talking about. Let's get cracking. His name is Brent. Hexagon is the company. Anyway, it's a good conversation, a lot of meat to it. We were on site, we were at a conference, and so it's sort of one of those quasi-conference interviews that we did over the World Wide Web, the internet. But it was still a great conversation, and Brent just hit it out of the park. All right, one plug for Industrial Talk. You got to go out there. You got to go to industrialtalk.com. And just get engaged. Just say, Scott, I want to get engaged on this ecosystem, because we have an expanding group of professionals that want to collaborate, want to continue to educate. You need to be a part of it. You need to contribute to that content development. Of course, innovation is the name of the game too as well. A lot of conversations wrapped up in innovation. It's happening. And the only way that I know, the only way, is that if you continue to educate yourself, find those individuals, those trusted Sherpas that you can collaborate with so that you can innovate properly, yet it's important for your business resilience, absolutely. All right, as I said, we have a fairly lengthy conversation, so I'll keep this intro short. We go into a lot of detail, so paper and pencil on this conversation, and I know that you and many others in all my conversations talk about how do I retain, how do I attract, how do I get the skilled individuals that I need to just maintain business continuity at a minimum. Brent brings that all to the table. So enjoy this conversation with Brent. Brent, welcome to Industrial Talk. Thank you very much for joining. How are you doing today?
Hey, Scott, it's great to be here. I'm doing well today. The weather's perfect for me, so thanks for asking.
Where's home?
Home is Blue Ridge, Georgia. I'm a mountain man half the year, and then I'm a beach guy the other half. So I go out in North Carolina, out on the beach the other half of the year when it's warm and the waves are spinning.
Well, if you're out here on video listener and you see that I have some glass behind me, I'm on site here in Orlando. So just keep that in mind. Don't be distracted by people walking behind me. It just is what it is. There, I've cleared out the room for you.
Great.
Yeah. All right. Before we get into the conversation, please tell the listeners a little bit about who Brent is.
A little background. As you'll hear when I talk, I've got a little bit of a accent, and it's from 35 years outside of Pittsburgh. I was in D.C. for a long time, but I grew up in Pittsburgh around the steel mills. I was just doing some genealogy the other day, and all my grandfathers, all my uncles, everybody that was in my family all worked in steel mills. And so I've got a lot of family pictures of guys in steel mills and even some of my grandmothers working in factories and things like that. So really gave me a love for the working person and what it meant to work in coal mines, steel mills, factories. And I did that all growing up through high school and in college, and finally worked my way out of the smog and the smoke and made my way to D.C. to start my career doing all stuff human.
So interesting. I had a fortunate opportunity to take a tour of, I want to say, DeFasco, and that would be up in Hamilton, Ontario. What I remember as a young lad, because my uncle worked there, was one, the heat.
it just was amazing hot, right? And then two, the skill of just what went into just manufacturing steel. And it was just a memory that it just stuck with me. But I just remember the heat. There was an ingot on a rail just off in the distance, and we're driving by, and I could feel the heat coming off of that ingot.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing when you really dig into it. I mean, I had an uncle that sold bricks to refractories and steel mills. And, yeah. You know, my grandfather was a aluminum polisher and, you know, laid on his stomach and all kinds of crazy things that when you get into, you know, what it's like to work in steel mills and things like that.
Yeah, it's impressive. It really is. It's impressive. And the quality of the steel and everything else. Before we get into the topic real quick, I want everybody to level set, because we're talking about the human element associated with many businesses in industry. One of the areas that it's an observation, but I mean, you can definitely bring some light. Well, a lot of people still to this day don't know about Hexagon.
Oh, that's true. I mean, Hexagon's been around for a while, and, you know, they've really tried to build a connected worker portfolio, and they've done this through, you know, organic growth and a lot of acquisition to, you know, when they find a gap in the industry, they try to acquire that capability. And it's surprising, most of your audience won't know, but, you know, Hexagon, that product suite, some of it, more of it, less of it, you know, all of it is used in over half of oil, gas, and chemical organizations to help them become more efficient and effective. So, you know, this is one of the things that probably needs to get out there a bit more, is how big Hexagon really is in terms of its density and penetration into the market.
Yeah, I went to the user event in Vegas this past year, and what jumped out in 4D was the innovation that Hexagon leads. I mean, there's just so much innovation. It's wild to hear about it, and you go, "Wow!" The future is now. You know, that type of statement, but amazing stuff. Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, and I'll tell you, we've been at this, you know, connected worker industry for, you know, almost 15 years now. Started in 2011. And, you know, companies like Hexagon have really been working, but it's not easy to do. You know, it's not easy to figure out what the industry needs and how things are moving and what pieces fit together to form an ecosystem. And, you know, because again, the world's always spinning and turning, you know, so, but I think they've been doing a good job at trying to piece the end-to-end solution together. But probably more challenging is to tell the story, the narrative of what it looks like, so companies can actually understand it.
Yeah, tell us, define connected worker. That to me is sort of nebulous. What do you mean by that?
Well, it really started, you know, if you think about it, in the industry, the first connected worker was really people with flags. You know, even if you think about the Civil War, you know, General Warren and his group on Little Round Top, they were signal flags, you know. Then if you think about manufacturing in the 70s, they dealt with walkie-talkies. You know, that was how they connected people from, you know, a console room maybe into the field, you know. But then when we came up with the iPhone in like 2007, we started to get, you know, a lot of connectivity. And, you know, so here we are today with this model. And I've got a maturity model that I use to kind of describe Industry 4 and what's called cyber physical connectivity. This idea of these, you know, nine pillars, you know, things like, you know, blockchain and sensors and drones and, you know, all Internet of Things and all that kind of stuff. And really, when you start at the first level of connectivity, it's really this foundation. It's basically the Internet of Things, so that ability to connect things that forms digital integration. Okay, and that's the groundwork. So various data sources can interact digitally, and it creates a more comprehensive view of manufacturing processes, right? So you've got that. Then you get this digital integrate or data integration where you get, all your data, digital sources now give you a holistic data set. So that gives you an understanding of the operations. So now you can see, well, what is the entire flow of the operations doing? When you get that enables you to optimize. So now you can make data-driven decision-making and optimization to reduce waste and improve productivity. So in all those things, people are deployed. And so if you think about it, now somebody can not only see what a sensor and drone are doing for, working at heights or confined spaces or hazardous areas, now they can see what the process is doing, the operations are doing. You start to optimize that and optimize the human being in that. And you finally get to things like advanced automation, because now you it's pure optimization. You advance automation, you evolve all these things, and now the machines can actually adapt to do more things like predictive maintenance, and that has new heights and new ways for humans to think about where the operations are going. And all that goes to this thing that we've always aspired to, and the whole aspiration of Industry 4 is to get to this what we call a smart factory. So where machines anticipate issues, they self-optimize, and they continually enhance operations. So that's how the Industry 4 matures. And then within that, you've got this person called a connected worker, and as each of those levels matures, what they're connected to matures. And it's just like this thing with data analytics. You've got O data, which is operational data. You've got H data, which is kind of the human resource data. Who is the person? What's their experience level? What's their unit number? All those kind of things. And then you tie that with this subjective data. How do they actually feel about the process? So all this stuff's coming together really quickly to create what we call this connected worker. So they're connected to the process, they're connected to the plant, they're connected to their workforce community, and the more and more they're connected. So that's a long way to say that, yeah.
Yeah, but see, this is what's interesting. And let's say I'm Joe Manufacturer. I own a company, and it's Joe Manufacturing, and we manufacturing things. And I've been in business for 20 years, and I'm feeling the pinch of trying to find people to keep my process rolling. And then I'm being inundated by the fact that I need to be connected in some way, shape, or form. What does that mean to me? Where do I start? What's important to me? And it's like a confused mind doesn't make any decision. I'm confused. So I don't know where to go. I don't know who to trust. I don't. And then you get the marketplace that you find people who hang shingles out and saying, yeah, we're all about collecting data off of assets. And maybe they're not, but I don't have the
Right.
bandwidth. How do you deal with that?
Well, see, this is one. It's a great observation, and this is why you need people that are more expert and specialized. So, for example, the first phase when they first introduced cyber physical connectivity and all these abilities, blockchain, drone sensors, what they did is they wanted to get people out of harm's way, and they wanted to get rid of the dull work, the dirty
Yeah.
work, the dangerous work, the demanding work, and the difficult work for humans to do. So, the first thing they did is, vendors would come in and say, well, we can help you get people out of, heights or confined spaces, or we can help, where it's really repetitive and you really want better quality and consistency in how things go. That's the first level. But then, you get people worrying about automation taking over and taking their jobs. And that's where they have to be really smart to learn when to optimize through automation, when to humanate or, humanize through really
Right.
people-centric work, and then when to cobot. And this is the problem we're at now, is most companies, and this even happened when I was at Shell, people understanding the algorithm to say, when is the flow? So when is it, what characteristics make work best to automate, humanate, and cobot? And that's where there's a lot of lack of expertise in
Yeah.
industry. Yeah. And again, this is what happens because I have this big thing. I grew up in the, working in the late 80s and 90s. So right. Business process engineering was a big thing back then, TQM, productivity management, all those kind of things. Those things, people could get by doing their day job and contributing to a business process reengineering team or a TQM team.
Right.
With today, it's a hell of a lot more complex, and you can't take a person, you can't take Joe and Jane and say, you're going to give me 4 hours a week and we're going to put in connected ecosystems. It takes a bigger village to do that. And so that's why even companies are, if you ask most companies, you survey them, you're going to get that confusion you talked about. I'll ask people, who owns your connected worker ecosystem? And they'll say, well, I don't know. Is it HR? Is it IT? Is it operations? Is it finance? I don't know who owns it. Who's got the hot potato?
I don't know. I don't think that there's clarity behind that. But I
there's
know
for a lot of companies, and they don't have the strategy. You know, they've got the tactics, but, the tactics are easy because tactics don't always connect to form strategy. And it's just like a lot of the vendors, and I know Hexagon, for example, works hard not to sell single point solutions. But here's what happens in this connected ecosystem industry. Because most companies don't have a head of connected ecosystems or head of connectivity, various people have their own little fiefdom. So they can go with a vendor to lunch, and the vendor can say, I can give you a single point solution to take care of your one issue. So then what happens is all these single point solutions get implemented because the vendors say, well, it's a hell of a lot easier for me to push through and sell a single point solution than an end-to-end solution. Yeah. And the companies say, well, I don't have anybody that owns end-to-end solutions. So we buy all these single point solutions that create the clutter you talked about.
Yeah. See, and just that scenario where you get these single point solutions and there's multiple types and it's got these little, it's laying out confusion. It's not optimal right. by any means. And you're not going to achieve, and this is where the bad part comes. You're not going to achieve the efficiencies that are being touted by being connected. The other right. component is the cybersecurity, right? Cyber.
Right.
I've heard stories, Brent, of companies like, all right, all I need is this device. I'll stick it out on this asset. It starts, pinging data. And of course, data is a whole nother conversation. Is it good data, clean data, scrub data, whatever it might be, data. And
right.
is it delivering the accuracy that I want? But then I'm putting all these devices out there thinking because somebody said I need to. Now I have these multiple points where right. I've got penetration, that potential penetration. That's right. not good either.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. I mean, if you look at you look at companies, like I'll go to a lot of big companies and work with them. They'll have five different technology platforms for procedure management.
Yeah.
They'll have a learning ecosystem that has a learning management system, a learning content management system, a learning experience platform, a learning data platform. And so they'll have all these different platforms that they have to figure out how they coordinate. And this is what's happening is we're not integrating with a bigger strategy. And the same thing when I talk and I go to ask most companies, that maturity model that I gave you, digital integration. Well, jobs that are needed for digital integration might be an Internet of Things specialist, a data integration specialist. If I go to companies today and I say, how many IoT specialists do you have? Zero. How many data integration specialists do you have? Zero. So what's happening is as this technology is evolving, we're not creating the jobs fast enough to say, if we're going to do this, we need to have a data scientist. We need to have a business intelligence analyst. And we don't have those roles to do those things because people are still doing it as hobbyism or just, patchwork. We're finding out we need this.
See, that is another excellent point. We just don't have the people. We just don't have them. The speed, there's this velocity that exists in the world of connected anything, right? It's just fast. And things are changing so drastically. And every company is looking for that leverage, that that opportunity to create greater value in some way, shape, or form. And I know that if my competition is ahead of me in that regard, then I've got a disadvantage. And so, but with all that said, it's a challenge. Got it.
Right.
What do you recommend companies, let's say Scott Manufacturing, what do you recommend?
Well, here's the thing. So if you look at our ecosystem for our pipelines, our talent pipeline, you know, my son is a process engineer at Eli Lilly, went to Georgia Tech, became a chemical engineer, doing great. Now, in the world today, because of all these emerging technologies and all this new data, could we maybe have at a university process optimization specialist that go a little bit more specialized than just a overall process engineer? Should we have simulation engineers, robotic engineers, predictive maintenance specialists, you know, AI and machine learning engineers? And, you know, so this is the thing, is that if you really need to dig into things deeper because they're becoming more complex with a sense-making of data that you need to, you know, make sense out of, do we have the people that are specialized enough to optimize what these new technologies are offering? So I sometimes still feel that's a disconnect, you know, because what happens is you take a process engineer or a chemical engineer, and that's a big umbrella. But then you ask them maybe this month, well, we need you to act more like a robotics engineer or maybe more of a process optimization specialist. I mean, is that giving them enough, you know, to really, you know, number one, could we make the industries more interesting and attract more people if we started to do this kind of specialization, you know, where people could, you know, grow these kind of skills that aren't growing fast enough?
Do you think our institutions, our educational system is nimble enough to be able to take that into consideration?
No, Jack, be nimble, Jane, be quick. No, because what's happening, if you look at our pipelines today, you know, the American dream was to go to the best university you could go to Harvard, Yale, Columbia, wherever you could go to and whatever you could get into. But you left with debt. Now the Gen Zers are saying, I'd rather go to a lesser known university, get a scholarship and leave the university without debt.
Yeah.
But then you've got a whole nother set of Gen Zers that say, I don't want to go to some company and climb the gristly ladder to be a leader, because most companies, that's the only path they give you to progress, is start at, you know, your basic engineer level and you become technical expert. You become technical leader expert.
Yeah.
And what the Gen Zers want today is they say, you know what, I might want to, because I talked to a guy the other day and he was a technical person that repaired Peloton equipment in hotels. The company gave him a company car.
Yeah.
He drove to all his stuff. He had full autonomy, and he potentially makes as much as a university college graduate engineer coming out. I think he only made like $10,000 a year less, but he had his own car paid for, his own expense account, and he didn't even have a GED. And so, you know, these kids today are looking at this. I could go into the trades and I can make just as much money without leaving with a $250,000 college bill. You know, so I think companies and industry need to start saying, you know, you can be a tradesperson and you can be an AI machine learning engineer. You know, you can be a smart factory architect, or you can be a cybersecurity specialist or an HMI specialist, you know. And we need to have those new channels for people to have new kind of career paths.
Yeah, I just, you know, who am I? You know, I just sort of gaze out in the marketplace, and I just, the speed at which a lot of this technology, this innovation is happening, I agree with you 100%. Do I need somebody that's, you know, coming out of a university to be able to handle some of this stuff? Like, okay, case in point, like, do you need somebody from a university that can clean data? Clean data. I mean, everything starts with data. Scrub it, clean it, make it accurate. Now that's a hell of a job. It's tough,
right,
but it's a heck of a job.
Right.
And everybody needs it.
Because you've got all these things. I mean, this whole idea of roboting, do we really have a pipeline of talented people that understand the world of how humans and machines interface?
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's big in the future, I don't know, university pipeline or community college pipeline or a credit, you know, a associate degree pipeline of people that can go and say, look, I can be an expert, a specialist in getting humans and machines to work effectively together and design those work systems.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, we just aren't building fast enough for the world of what it's going to look like in 2 years, in 3 years.
And you know, other countries are doing that.
I know they are.
Yeah. Other countries have committed to being able to do that effectively. And they're putting a lot of capital behind it, too, as well.
Well, if you think about these things, I mean, we talk a lot about the circular economy. Are we building pipelines of Gen Zers that are going to be experts or specialists in, you know, circular economy or waste management and industry professions? You know, it's a side hustle in current work today. And I think if these things are going to really grow in our ecosystem of industry, we're not building the pipelines.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%.
Or even like the social impact specialist. I remember when I was in Shell, 10 plus years ago, we were working in the Arctic. And, you know, I think 75% of every dollar was spent on environmental relations, you know, not actual drills and bits and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was spent on the environmental aspect. And, yeah, we had environmental engineers, but were they social impact specialists? No. And if I said to you, what's probably a more appropriate role in 2025? An environmental engineer, you know, those are the people that were taking down, you know, Brent Spa in the you know, Gulf across, you know, off the coast of England, you know, a big platform and figuring how to dispose of it. Versus now in 2025, maybe the grandson of the environmental engineer is the social impact specialist.
It's changing. I the only way that I know that is a viable option with all of the changes happening in the marketplace, all of the innovation, the technology. I just recommend trusted individuals, somebody that's there. I don't have Scott Manufacturing doesn't have the bandwidth to do all of this. Scott Manufacturing wants to just keep his business rolling and make payroll, that type of thing. I need somebody that I can trust and to take along on that journey, because I see the value of it, but where's the bandwidth? I can't do it.
Right. And this is why you also need these people to make a pragmatic value proposition to business owners like yourself to say, yeah, it's worth me investing in this. So, like, for example, the big problem with Industry 4 is it's entirely tech-centric. I mean, you know, if you think about it, 9 pillars of cyber-physical connectivity. Yeah. Now, this Industry 5 that I often talk about, that is the next evolution. So it's saying, okay, now you've got all this technology and you're going to maximize automation and you're going to make everything smart in factories that you can. Well, what's been missing? And the thing that's been missing is the human element. So like the maturity model for Industry 5 is you got to prepare for, you know, more tech enabled integration and collaboration between not only humans and tech, but humans and humans with tech. Then you've got to have this collaboration that because connectivity is going to spur more collaboration. And I always use the example, you know, Shell, we used to have 15 hydrocrackers across the globe. They never talked to each other because they were all in different plants in different countries. But now you have these smart integrative shift handovers. So now one crew coming into Deer Park and, you know, read what happened with the hydrocracker last night and plan for the day working. But now because everything's connected, they can collaborate with all the other units across the world to say, what did you learn from your hydrocracker? And so that was never available 5 years ago. Now it is. But we're not training our people to do that because we're still thinking in hierarchical organizations that are very siloed, and we're not thinking about the matrix level of connectivity that, you know, data and integration can provide us.
Yeah, and the ability to normalize that data too. Let's say I have a cracker in Texas. Is it and the environment around the Texas? It's hot. It's summer. It's whatever that weather component. I can normalize that data and have something similar in another part of the country or the world, and say, yeah, I see how they're compared to each other. We're more efficient here. Whatever it might be.
Right. Yeah. And then you get this with this greater levels of data. I mean, I don't even think people have cracked the code yet on what all this new data is going to do for data-driven decision-making, collaborative insights, collaborative decision-making. I mean, it's going to be a new generation of decision-making that can be more trend-based, longer-term, more of these things predictive and prescriptive. But what that also does in this Industry 5 is people are going to have even a greater resilience through collaboration, because the resiliency of the people is going to have to be strengthened, because as we strengthen operations and always make operations smarter and there's more algorithms and all this kind of thing, people are going to have to be more agile and dynamic to respond to those changes.
Find a Sherpa, find a trusted individual, find somebody. Yeah. And the reality is that me, Scott Manufacturer, as I use that use case as an example, it doesn't exist, by the way, but I need it. I need to find that trusted individual.
I always think about it, you know, if you play poker, I mean, okay. Maybe you might be the guy that plays with a group, you know, once a week. And, you know, you've got a certain level of skills and you got so much on the line. Maybe you're $50 for the night or something like that. And then you've got a whole level of people that go to, you know, mini tournaments, major tournaments. Yeah. Then you've got the guy and gal sitting in Vegas. Their skill set is more requisite with their risk level, you know. And I think we're going to have to get to the guys and gals like yourself that says, look, you know, the decisions you're making, you know, you might not put a lot of technology in if, you know, you're not going to get harvest a lot of value out of it because of your scale or your scope. Yeah. But as that increases, you got to really start thinking about what value can, you know, these new technologies, these new ways of working deliver for you.
Yeah. I don't see how you can avoid it. If you're a business that wants to be around a little longer than 2-5 years, well, you need to definitely look into how you can be more connected, pull that data, right. Well, find that goal.
And I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the majority of my career, I worked with what we call descriptive analytics. So it kind of says, you know, what happened in the past with worker performance, you know, safety incidents, productivity, you know, so what was the historical pattern, you know, and can I make any correlations or causation from that? And then I got to work with what we, you know, call diagnostic analytics. So why did it happen? You know, why did worker performance go up or go down, or why did safety incidents go up or down? And, you know, so that was like looking at root causes. Well, very little of my career has been on, you know, predictive analytics or prescriptive. Now, I hope that my son, you know, 80% of his analytics are going to be more about predictive and prescriptive than descriptive and diagnostic. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because those add much more value exponentially.
Yeah. It is. It's going to happen that way. Yeah. And again, I'm all about that. I advocate education, collaboration, and innovation. Just in those, you got to educate. It's all out there. It's not as if it's different. I mean, it's just up to the individual to find the right stuff. But then to collaborate, that to me is that's the key. And I know that it's a term that's overly used, but I just don't see any other way of getting around it, where you got to find somebody that you can trust. And then
let's go back to, you know, Scott, you as the CEO of your company. So what do you care about? You care about, you know, can I keep the lights on? Can I put a paycheck in everybody's hand, you know, every 2 weeks, every month? And, you know, can I take a little bit home for myself? And, you know, and to do that, you've got to attract people, good people, and you've got to keep them. But what's going on today is most companies have a really bad, what I call anatomy of work. And, you know, a lot of the research says, you know, 60% of a person's day is doing garbage work that adds no value. And it, in fact, frustrates people and disengages them. And that's why these disengagement rates are up to 80%. And, you know, discretionary effort is off the table for most cases. And it's because we have these unproductive, unnecessary meetings. You know, we've got decision making in companies that is slow and overanalyzed and it's paralyzed. And, you know, your communication channels are terrible. And, you know, you got too much email and it's, you know, all these things. And goals aren't clear and, you know, tasks aren't well designed. And so we can use these cyber physical systems and this connectivity to improve that anatomy of work, because that then engages the worker through the human experience cycle. So they're happier to go and do a task, you know, to finish a task and move on to either a new task or repeat the task because they have a better experience. And so, you know, that's one thing of this anatomy of work. I'm hoping that cyber physical connectivity, this connected worker paradigm, is going to help people have a better work experience, so they actually want to stay and they actually see channels of growth.
Yeah.
And you know, they don't get bored of being a console operator for 10 years.
Yeah. No.
You know,
you're hitting on all cylinders here, Brent.
You know, that's the thing though. I mean, because what happens is people spend so much time complaining about the work because the work is actually not well designed and it's preventing them from being engaged and it's preventing them from growing and it's preventing them from having a work-life balance or the flexibility that they want. I mean, these Gen Zers aren't going to put up with that, you know.
Not even close. Hey, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Let me go about steel. Yeah, well, let's do that. Let's do that. I'll tell you this, because as I work and look at industry, and obviously I'm an advocate for, you know, global industry overall, but I look at, you know, the U.S. industry, because that's been kind of, if you look at the last 200 years from 1750, that's the industry that's really grown the most with, you know, the Great Britain and companies like that. But I told you, I started this with, you know, my love of the steel industry and my heritage in the steel industry. And, you know, if you think about 1893, Andrew Carnegie sold a lot of his railroad stock and all his stuff so he could pivot and get into the steel industry. And everybody thought he was crazy because at the time there was a bit of a big recession going on in the U.S. And they said, you're crazy for building these, you know, huge, you know, the U.S. largest industrial plants at the time. Well, if you think about it, we only lasted 100 years because in 1993, China took over as the world leading producer of steel. And what's happened with that, and as I dig into that, I always worry about that because, you know, China's now producing 50% of the world's steel, but they're not meeting the manufacturing standards that U.S. steel meets today. So the testing and material standards, you know, they're just not as rigorous. And that means the steel isn't as safe. It's not as durable. You know, brittleness goes in under welding, you know, the structural integrity for whether it be buildings or bridges or whatever those are. And, you know, the Chinese steel can put, you know, boron and things in their steel to earn tax rebates, but it makes the metal more prone to cracking and posing, you know, safety threats. And, you know, I always worry about, you know, when we talk about, you know, climate change and CO2 and decarbonization, when, you know, now you're having a steel maker like China producing half the world's steel, now they're putting in a lot of, you know, there's lower levels of impurities like sulfur and phosphorus and in the steel, and it lacks the strength and it's producing more pollutants. And so I always worry about that. And I'm saying, you know, this is one of the things that industry, global industry, has to look and be much more strategic at in terms of, okay, who's in the best position to produce the highest quality with the greatest safety and the greatest benefit to the environment. And that's one of the things that, you know, I look at and I it will go full circle on, you know, my grandfather shoveling, you know, coal into the old the old furnace to, you know, what's going on today.
Well, that's going to be a follow-up conversation because I think that's a fascinating topic, quite frankly. Before we depart, how do people get a hold of you there, Brent? And say, hey, I want to talk to Brent. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, the best way is probably, you know, the channel called LinkedIn. I mean, I'm always receptive to that. But it's kind of my one best source.
Good answer. Because that's anything else that, other than that, I start to, it's like, I don't know how to manage it. Just listener, just get on LinkedIn. It's easy. Link it, find it, stat card, everything's good. Well, you were absolutely wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
Well, hey, I enjoyed it too.
Yeah, you're an awesome guy. All right, listeners, we're going to wrap it up on the other side. Remember, we're going to have all the contact information for Brent out on Industrial Talk, so reach out to him, find out more. You will not be disappointed. As you can tell, he's got mad skills. All right, stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Brent. One word. Human condition. Definitely knows what he's talking about. Boy, that was a fun conversation. Enjoyed it a lot. I hope you did too. I hope you took a lot of notes. Reach out to Brent. Go out to Industrial Talk. You can tell he's an open book. He would love to be able to have a conversation with you and discuss your challenges that you might be having with the you know, resources and what to do and how to retain. It's a common challenge out there, so find your Sherpa. He's a good one to start with, most definitely. All right, building a platform, celebrating industrial professionals around the world. That's what we are doing. We want you to be a part of it as well. Go out to Industrial Talk. Click on Connect With. You connect with me. What am I supposed to say? And I mean, just connect with me. So do it. Make it happen. Let's have a conversation. All right. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly. Hang out with Brent. Change the world. We're going to have another great conversation shortly. You can count on that, so stay tuned.